everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and today's Real Talk is with a real leader who is like the queen of badassery. My friend, Chris Walsh, is amazing, literally blows my mind. I was preparing for this and reading your profile, Chris, and I was like, how are you real? How is this possible? So I'm so glad that you've come here today, folks. I'm so glad that you get to know her. She's amazing. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Shauna. Too kind with the words. You're amazing. That's why I love talking to you all the time. I feel always like fire in my belly after I talk to you. So thanks for having me and sharing our chat with your community. Super excited.
Yeah, thank you so much. So folks, I usually give you a context for how I know my guests. So I'll do that first, then I'll jump into all the details about Chris. But so Chris and I met at a conference called Hatch in Montana. And the whole concept of Hatch is like Hatch a Better World, help to make, as you all know, my mission is very much to make a positive impact with brands and people. And so that's where we met. And Chris, it was like, I remember meeting you and it was like just these magnets come together. And we didn't actually talk that much at the conference, but I just knew we were kindred spirits and I felt such common ground with you. I think in so many ways, as an athlete, as a female in business, and we talked about this the other day, we were kind of laughing. I was like, oh my gosh, Chris is like so senior as a part of all of this conference. And I didn't really realize you, like, you know, kind of what you were doing at the conference, and it was a whole thing. But I'm just so grateful that we got to meet there.
Yeah, it was amazing. I know I was just a lowly volunteer grabbing trash everywhere and setting up bed names at like 2 a.m. And it was amazing to meet you and learn so much about you. And it was a great environment, just like, you know, isolated up in the mountains, and it was so beautiful. And no, I'm stoked that we were able to like keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned Montana. So it was in Bozeman, and that's where you are now, right?
Yep. Yep. I live here in Bozeman 8 years.
It's amazing. I mean, amazing how much Bozeman has changed over
insane
the 8 years, over mm-hmm. 10 years. I mean, it's just such a magnet. I don't actually know. Did I ever tell you that my husband and I got married there?
No. How random.
I know. So I kind of, it was just a few years, I think, before we met and we were actually at that conference together. So I have such a warm spot in my heart for Bozeman. Such a great place. So Chris, I'm going to pause and kind of go back for a second. Like I said, I always give the audience that foundation of how I know you. But let's talk about kind of grounding folks in what you're doing right now, which is a lot, I will say. I say that respectfully. So I'm going to say this and then we'll go back to it. But you are COO and co-founder of LifeScore Music, mm-hmm. founder of Women of Winter, and you're also an ambassador for Rossignol Ski Company. Mm-hmm. So doing a lot, and the video that you just put out with Rossignol is amazing. So we'll share that with the audience as well. So let's go back. I mean, those are three pretty significant things that you're doing. And I will say you are early in your career still, I will say, which also blows my mind. But so talk to people about each one and kind of help them understand what you're doing. And then we'll go back to your evolution. But you want to start with LifeScore?
Yeah, for sure. So with LifeScore, I'm one of its four founders with Philip Shepard, who's a film and video game composer, Tom Gruber, who is one of the co-inventors of Siri, and he left Apple and came and joined us, and Ian Drew, who is an entrepreneur also from Europe. So I'm their sole female minority founder and board member, which, you know, I take heavy responsibility with that. And I think it's important, you know, when you kind of sit in those seats to figure out ways to elevate other women into roles of leadership. So in LifeScore, I take a really heavy hand in hiring. I really enjoy that. We're both athletes. I take a really strong sense of creating the right team, picking the right recruiting, if you will, and then putting them in the best like player program or environment to help them succeed and deliver what I see the potential in them to be and beyond that, right? So I think for my role as COO and co-founder, I do a lot of the operations day to day, from people to legal to working with our finance director, our brand team, and also just like overall larger strategy of what are we doing as a music tech company. So we do music tech. We provide music that can change to initial user context settings or environment settings, and we allow for that to be able to be generated in really, really large amounts and play for a never-ending amount of time using our technical algorithms and products. So what we like to say is, you know, we have a team of composers that are on staff. So we like to say, like, you know, there's a vast amount of human creativity. We're not here to replace it. We're here to augment it with technology in ways where humans can't necessarily scale. You know, you can't play for 24 hours a day. No one can, you know, follow every person that listens to LifeScore around and change the music based on, you know, what they're picking at the time. And so those are things that humans aren't great at, but technology is. And so we like to marry the two. So that's kind of what I do on a day to day.
It's amazing. So thank you for describing LifeScore. Let's take it to another level, if you can, and talk about who some of your clients are. And then how, you talked a little bit about it, but how do we as consumers actually then be able to experience that?
Absolutely. So our product is a B2B product. It's pretty new in the marketplace in the sense that there isn't something out there right now that can do what we do at scale. So what we like to do is partner with companies that really know their customers well, because we don't know their customers well. And so working with someone that does understand what experience they want from a music perspective is really, really helpful. So some of our public clients are Audi. So later this year, they'll be rolling cars off production with our music to help you soundtrack your drive. There'll be experiences in the car where based on what you select and how you drive, the music will change to give you your own kind of like living soundtrack. We just launched with Deezer, which is a kind of a large streaming platform, similar to Spotify. They have a larger base in Europe. And what we're providing for them are long, infinite soundscapes, basically for their new health and wellness app called Zen. So they have a general app like Spotify, and they've spun out a health and wellness app, and we provide musical soundscapes there. So Zen, be Zen by the forest, be Zen by the sea. And those are kind of, if you think about the music as like a river, every time you step into it, it's going to be different. So once you step into it, it's going to kind of pass you by. And the next time you step into that river of music, that stream, again, it'll always be different. So what we're able to do different than playlists, like it won't loop, it won't come back. You'll kind of always be living in this like ephemeral world that we create.
That's amazing. And I love how you talked about the AI part, that it's not meant to like replace people, because I think there's quite a bit of fear, I'll call it, but I think it's just about the unknown. How has that come up for you in any of the conversations you're having, whether it's with a brand, and our PD is joining the conversation.
Hello, my favorite dogs.
I know. I'm going to try my hardest to keep her at bay. So back to the AI, like has that come up at all, or how do you kind of meet that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes up a lot, right? I think we're always going to be concerned with something feeling like it's replacing us instead of enhancing us. And someone said to me the other day, I'm also on the advisory board for the computer science school at MSU. And so we were at our annual meeting, and this kind of came up with ChatGPT and other forms of technology, which you may not even consider AI, but think about like the calculator. And when that first came out, how many math teachers probably freaked out and were like, oh my God, no one's going to be able to do math again. And maybe we aren't as good as math as we were before, but you know, I think if you can harness technology in a way that allows for humans to be more efficient, to tap more into their creative side where they wouldn't necessarily have had time to be innovative. So someone said to me, the example they gave was, you know, in Google Docs, it can suggest sentences to complete. And you're like, oh my God, it's almost like reading my mind. And they're like, what do you think about that? And I'm like, I'll take every second of efficiency that's possible. Like, I'll take the suggestion. Does that mean I always accept it? No. Is it a great suggestion sometimes? Absolutely. Might I reword it? Absolutely. But those extra, like, you know, 2 seconds of that I don't have to type or come up with, that's something that's pretty like mundane and banal. yeah, I'll take it, because that when you like add that cumulatively, that allows me another like 2 hours for where I can spend in my zone of genius, which is, I think, where a lot of us should be spending our time, hopefully. There's this like awesome book that I've been reading, and it talks about like zones that people operate in. And for founders, I think when you're first starting a startup, you're operating in all the zones because there's no one else on the team. So the zones are like your zone of incompetence, your zone of competence, your zone of greatness, and your zone of genius. When you're starting out, you're kind of like doing everything because there's no one else. And at some point, very quickly, you kind of outsource your zone of incompetence because probably you'll do terrible, like accounting. I would never do that myself. So I have to definitely hire an accountant and triage that out. And then, you know, there's your zone of competence where you're pretty good at, but not exactly. Like you're barely getting by, your C level. And then there's your zone of greatness, which is what people get really stuck at. And I think that's where I got stuck at in a lot of times in my career was like, you are really good at this. And everyone else sees you're also really good at this. So of course you should do it. Why not? But your passion isn't there. Like your personal genius isn't there. You should not do that. You need to let that go. And I think as founders or as people, we're like, well, we're so good at this. Like, why shouldn't I do it? But if it doesn't like fire you up, like don't do it. That's not where you should be operating. And so anytime that something gives me more time to operate in my zone of genius, I'm like, absolutely. Like I will take that extra time, that extra efficiency. So I think, you know, AI is going to be it's going to be treated as well as like you can treat it, meaning like the creators around it hopefully are thinking about ethical ways for it to be applied. We think about that in LifeScore. We are not trying to, our music isn't created because it's created by a machine. Every single note or harmony you hear was composed originally by a human being. What we do with the AI is being able to like combinatorically create so many permutations of the music that it is unique every time. That would be, you know, that at scale would be an enormous feat for a human being, not necessarily their, you know, zone of genius. I would say it would be more in creating the initial building blocks. So my point being is like, yeah, I'll take any minute I can to help me operate in my zone of genius. I don't want to operate in the other zones. I've done that before. And I realized like, that's just not where my passion, creativity, innovation is really coming out.
Yeah, it's so true. And I was talking to someone recently about AI as well, this whole concept of, you know, again, like the fear and stuff. And the reality that people are saying, again, like I'm not in the space like you are, but people are saying that AI can't operate completely on its own and be accurate. So it needs that human component to it. So I think that's another thing that isn't talked about that much. But it's a great way when I think we have some fear about it to think about, again, the way, to your point, it's actually complementing us and helping us operate in our, you know, areas of strength. And I love how you went through all of that. So thank you so much for explaining it. It's so cool. And I get this mental image of like driving down in some amazing, you know, beautiful car and like, you know, again, like on a winding road or something and having the music play to that. Like what an incredible experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so awesome. So wait, where are you in, how long has the company been in play? I forget, a couple years, right?
Yeah. So the company was founded in 2016, really kind of, we started being operational in about 2017. And then there was only about three of us at the time. Tom came on in 2018. So for the beginning, we were kind of bootstrapped and working between other jobs to help like fund the ideas and the prototypes and kind of just where we were at the time. And then around 2019 is when we did our first sort of fundraising round and we kind of grew the team. And then in 2021, we did our, no, 2022. I can't remember anymore. We did our Series A. It all blends together. We did our Series A last February. And so since that Series A, the team grew, I think almost more than double. So we're past 30 now employees. Yeah. But we were just like a little team of three for a while. Three and then four. Yeah. Three and four. So once Tom came on, we were like the full founding team.
Wow. It's so awesome. Well, we'll probably talk more about it as we keep going. But I want to hop into one of the other things in your world, which is your Women of Winter company. So I would love for you to talk with us about your mission with that and who is positively impacted?
Yeah. So Women of Winter is it's now a nonprofit. Before it was just like this little random grassroots thing that was bopping around. I think I have like an affliction where I have ideas and then they become more than I expect them to be. So it really started in my ski school locker room. So I teach skiing at the Yellowstone Club in the winters. And we have like a really strong women's staff there and other instructors. So on one side of my locker room is my friend Francesca Paviard Kane, and she's been on the Freeride World Tour. She's like podium numerous times. And that summer we were just coming back. Like it's like first days back, like first day of school. And she had come back and I was like, oh, how was your winter? Like down south. And she was like, it's amazing. I was filming with Warren Miller. And I was like, that's so cool. There's just not a lot of women being featured in Warren Miller films. And she had like a full feature in there. And I was like, that's amazing. You know, you're so cool. And then next person comes by, it's my friend Carly, literally the other locker next to me. And I'm like, what did you do? She's like, I just come back from this art show, you know, because her art is stunning. Carly Jo Hagen, Carly Jo Studios, if you ever wondering, I wonder if I can move my little camera for a second. Maybe I'll do it later so I don't ruin our podcast. But I have her painting right here and it's really cool. And I actually
Move it.
I feel like I'm going to like mess this up and then I'm never going to get it back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she made that painting for me. And we actually took that painting, scanned it, and now it's on a pair of skis. And every time, so you know how you can wrap snowmobiles?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We wrap the skis. We just put some bomb stickers on them. And every time people see my skis, it's like these, this like panther, they're snow leopard. They're like, what are these skis?
So folks, if you're listening to this and you're not watching the video, it is this exquisite painting of a panther, you said.
Right? Yeah, like a snow leopard.
It's gorgeous. And it has like this red around the face and the body, but that's amazing. So that was like on the skis.
Yeah. So we scanned that image and we like had them on the skis. So half the snow leopard is on one side, half is on the other. And you put the skis together and it's like the paint. It's so cool. Anyway. So she had just come back and she was designing top sheets for Icelandic and she'd done an art show and I'm like, you're amazing. And when I first moved to Bozeman, I had like no job, nothing. I was a finance lawyer at Latham for a really long time. I was like a senior associate there. And that's where I was talking about like that zone of greatness. Like I was definitely operating in a zone of greatness. I was very good at what I did. Probably too good, where I didn't understand at the time that you shouldn't do things just because you're good at them or that everyone tells you you're good at them. It's right. Not necessarily where, for me, where I can operate the best. Like I was successful, but personally inside, I felt like I was dying, which is like a really, really, you know, big dichotomy and like energy shift of, wow, you should be really happy, but you're not. And why? And I think it's because I was operating in the zone where I was just, it wasn't the right one for me. And so when I came to Bozeman, I started volunteering for like anything I thought was interesting because I had no job. So I was like, why not? And I volunteered for TEDx. And so I'd help put those on for 2 years. And so with like kind of that in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, we can just like put on like a little TED talk, just the two of you. I can coach you guys as speakers. We'll put together like this beautiful, like, you know, hero's story arc. We'll make it relatable. We'll make it feel like really real to the women and girls in our community who I think need to hear your stories, because I wish I had heard their stories like growing up. You know, I grew up, my parents are both immigrants. And I think with that mindset, sometimes there's like a mindset of scarcity where they really want you to succeed. And especially in Asian families, there's like three paths to success. It's like, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer. I think an engineer or an accountant. I don't know what the other one is. I only know the two because they would always tell those to me. And my mom, from a really young age, she took me to the hospital all the time because she worked there. And I think she thought I was going to love it. Instead, I absolutely was like, I am never going to be a doctor. This is terrible. This place smells like cafeteria food. I never want to come here. Oh. So I guess the other option was like eventually to be a lawyer. I fought it for a while, but that's eventually what happened. And so I wish I had heard from women like them, women who were able to create these lives for themselves where it was so passion filled with what they loved and they were successful. They weren't just like, oh, you know, just struggling to like make it work. You know, they had true success in things they loved. And I just didn't really have that role model growing up of, okay, this is what you can do with things you love. It's kind of like you grow up, you do these things. And so I wanted women and girls in our community to hear their stories because I wish I had those stories growing up. And so we just like raised a little money, like I think it was like $1,000 at the time. And just because I'm kind of a fancy person. And so I really was like, no, we have to have like a really nice meat and cheese spread. We'll do it at a wine bar. We'll give away like the first 300 glasses of wine and it'll be like a whole thing. And people have to get dressed up and be like cute and not just be like in your ski clothes because I'm in that every day and I want to go home and shower and be cute. And so we did this whole thing. We called it. And then they were like, hey, what should we put on the poster? I'm like, I don't know. Just say like a night in Bozeman with Women of Winter. And that's literally how the name came up. It wasn't like some genius way for me to think about like, what should we call it? And like now on the mountain, you know, our scholarship recipients are like screaming, wow, wow, wow. And I'm like, wow, I literally didn't even think about that at the time. Wow. But amazing like how things happen like that. So we did the show with them and it was incredible. I mean, their stories were beautiful. It was truly relatable. We talked about failure and success and coming up from those like moments when you're like complete, like knees and hands on the ground, you know, in the arena floor to standing back up and like finding that true, like triumphant path for yourself. So it was great. Like everyone loved them. And I was like, wow, we did a good job. Nice job, team. And next year everyone said, when's Women of Winter? And I was like, what are you talking about? It was just for fun. I just did this one fun thing. And so after enough feedback, we were like, wow, our community is actually really hungry for stories like this. I was hungry for it. That's why I did this. But then I realized there's like a real need in the community for it. And so we did Women of Winter again. But I think for me, there's a lot of places you can find inspiration. You can find it, you know, on Instagram or in TV show. You can find it in a lot of places. Inspiration is not, you know, without. And so for me, it was really like, okay, if we're going to do this, like, let's be meaningful and intentional about it. Let's drive from inspiration to just inspiration to action. And what does that mean? And so for me, what it meant is, because I'm kind of an education junkie. I've been in school for so long and I love it. I love learning. I think it gives you, especially as women and women of color, it gives us a way to fight assumptions that are made about us. You know, you can say what you think and you can speak from a place of authority and not just from a place of opinion or guess, which I think a lot of people do. And when you can shut that down really quick because you know what you're talking about, it's a great position to be in. And it's a position I much prefer to be in. I don't like being in places where I don't know what I'm doing. I don't understand. I don't have education behind it. Not to say it's like not cool being a beginner, but always be striving for education. And so what I really wanted to do was find places in snow sports where I felt there were just not enough women leaders kind of like being in that space. And how do we create more women leaders? And for me, that's like through education. And so I was on the chairlift with one of our patrollers and I'm like, again, like, what did you do this past summer? And she said, oh, I went to National Avalanche School, but you know, it's so crazy. Like I was the only woman in class. I was like, that is wild. And I was like, fuck that. Well, let's change that. And so the first thing we did was we did raise money for a scholarship to put 8 women together to get their Abby one, and also donated money for a woman to get her to go to National Avalanche School. A big thing of that is like, look, if you're going to make decisions about life and death, they should be made because you decided it, not because someone else, your partner, whoever is making those calls for you. And so that was the first scholarship year for Women of Winter. Then the third year was COVID. And you already know how I love the party part of the Women of Winter. I love the in-person. And so when that happened, I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this year. My team was like, why? And I'm like, well, it's not the same. I don't want to do it virtually. Like I'm not into the Zoom call. Like I'm Zoomed out. I cannot do any more Zooms. And they're like, no, we should totally do it. It's really, really important. And I'm like, I'll think about it. And just like, I feel like the universe like coincides in things when you like put yourself in like places you're supposed to be in, because at the same time, LifeScore was doing its first like public product, basically, or public showing of what it does. And we were working with Twitch, which is a large streaming platform. And they had a show called Artificial, which actually has won several Emmys. And we actually won a Webby for the work we did with them. And so what they did was they created this live TV show where the audience chat could choose the path of the show. And they had like a beautiful, like, backgrounds, and it really looked like an actual TV show. It didn't look like you were watching a Zoom call. Like it had this very, very, very beautiful design on it. And what we did was we read the audience chat in real time and we changed the music based on the audience chat. And so the audience was controlling the music and they were also controlling the show. It was actually pretty cool. And it was a great way for the show to have, they were 2 hour blocks, and to be able to do that, to soundtrack it with like tracks and like going back and forth, it would have been a lot, but they were able to do it with our tech. So that was awesome. But the point being is like, I was working with these producers and what they were doing was so beautiful. Like how it looked on screen, it like looked like a real TV show. And I was like, hey guys, like, random, I've got this like little nonprofit, not even nonprofit. I have this little organization. We're trying to do a show. Like, do you think you could help me? And I explained to them like what the show was going to be about. And they were like, absolutely. And so they helped create this like beautiful design for the screen, have like two, like three different cameras for like all the different speakers. So it would feel like the gear come camera one, camera two. Like it actually was like a real show and not like a Zoom call. And that's what I was like, okay, if we can do it that way, like I will do the show. And so universe just like intersecting in really weird ways like that. And at the time, it like George Floyd had just happened. Everyone in America was finally, because of COVID, having forced to be like, okay, these are important issues. Like we have true systemic failure. What are we going to do about it? And at the time I was like, you know, what am I doing? I don't want to put more noise out into the world that has no meaning. Like talking about skiing, like what am I doing? Is this impactful for like the greater conversation? And I just, as a time, initially it felt like, no, you're just putting noise. Like if you're going to do this, it needs to resonate with what is going on in the world and what we're doing. And at the time, again, weird universe stuff, I was reading this book, 31 Women Who Run the World, like CEOs Run the World. It's like this beautiful book. And this woman in there, her name's Stephanie Lampkin. She's since been married, so I think her name is Stephanie Van Putten now. And she was the CEO of Blendor, which is a diversity tech company where they would help rate or rank your diversity initiatives and organizations. They were working with Google, blah, blah. And she had like a Fortune 35 under 35 and all these incredible awards. And she is LGBTQ, African-American. And she basically in this book writes about her love for backcountry skiing. And I was like, that is crazy. And so I'm like, dude, what are the chances? So I'm like, it's virtual this year. So I didn't need local speakers, which again, like weird universe stuff. I don't know. It sounds really woo woo and I'm not a woo woo person, but I kind of did like lean into like weird universe things. And so I just like send her a LinkedIn message. I'm like, hey, is there any chance that you would want to, I know you speak for a million things and they probably pay you a lot of money. I've got no money, but I bet you've never talked about your skiing career. You know what I mean? And I was like, and I want you to speak with my friend, Sasha Dingle, who's also diverse and her mom was a refugee from Vietnam. She was on the Freeride World Tour. And I'd love for you to share this virtual stage with this epic skier and talk about your journeys together. Hopefully this is intriguing enough for you to respond to me. She responded like magic of magics. And I was like, shut up. That is wild. I didn't even know some people don't even read their LinkedIn messages. And so with that, I was like, okay, we can do this show. Yeah. And so we have these amazing speakers. Sam Ramirez Herrera, actually, who you know from Hatch, actually was my MC, which was incredible. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a great show. And at the time I was like, okay, what about this like action point? What am I going to do around this? And I was like, okay, well, maybe I can host a clinic. Like, I'll just host like a free ski day, like ski together and like just have like a bunch of, you know, BIPOC women come together and we'll all ski together. And I asked like some of our examiners or our training staff at the time. And I said, hey, do you know anyone else around here who's like me, like, you know, a BIPOC woman in kind of around my level of skiing and we could just help me with this clinic. I think it'd be too much for me to do it by myself. And they're like, there's no one else. And I was like, what? Like in all of this whole area, you're telling me right now, there's no one else that could help me run this day on snow. And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, well, we're going to fucking change that. Yeah. And that was like kind of the moment when I was like, okay, that's the scholarship we're going to do this year. So small pilot program, had no idea if it would even work, had no idea if anyone would apply. And I spoke with Herb Davis, who was the who's the head here in our region of the Professional Ski Instructors Association, and was like, hey, this is my idea. This is what I'd like to do. You know, I can raise money for it. Let me know. But I want to have like a level one, which is like your very introductory level ski instructor exam. And the idea is to like introduce and bring people into snow sports education. And we put applications out. I was assuming it would just be like local people applying, like local tribes, like some workers from the resorts. No way. It was like, we had people from Texas. Someone came from Maryland, Washington, Colorado. We had one person from Bozeman. And it was like, at that moment, I was like, wow, this is way bigger than Montana. Initial thoughts on that. And then we everyone came together, and it was like, I had two volunteers at the time running this thing. And like, it's like, we're just like a little ramshackle bunch. Like, we're doing our best, but we're not this big organization. And, you know, we had such an incredible group of women that came in that first year, and the conversations they had and the feedback we got from them, we were like, wow, this is a game changer. You know, they said, they said, in all my years, one of our recipients was, she was, I think, in her like early 60s. And she was like, you know, I've never skied in all my life with a group of all women of color training. And I was, that's crazy. And I was like, oh, neither have I. Interesting. I've never, me either, except right now. And so it was like, wow, okay, there is no community for this. And so I think the big part of what we learned is like, it's community. It's not just like, oh, we're putting, you know, women of color together in a group. It's putting them together and creating a community around them, creating a support structure where everyone can be vulnerable. Everyone can fail. Everyone can help each other and support each other and be kind of that cheerleader. And I see it year on year now. It's incredible. Our second year, you know, I didn't expect our scholarship women from the first year to come back, but they all did. We didn't even ask them at the time. And, you know, again, it's kind of like looking at what a community needs or what people need and servicing that instead of sort of, you know, just doing whatever you feel like. And so when I realized like, wow, they're all coming back, you're all going to fly to Montana on your own dime. And then they threw a graduation party for the new class. We were like, this is crazy. This is a thing. And then now I watch on Instagram, so many of them just meet up all around the country, and they're like, what, Women of Winter Reunion? And it's just like, okay, this is bigger than anything I ever thought possible. And it's, to me, kind of goes back to that point of like, if you have a community of people who really believe in you and you can feel vulnerable around them, show up as your authentic self, and know that they're there to support you until like your greatest potential, where you want to get to, who knows what you can do. And it was so cool at we just finished our last event, and we had a scholarship recipient, again, kind of a little older. And she was really afraid to do the bowl and the moguls. And then I took her through this like natural half pipe, and, you know, we all explained how to do it. And after she came out of the half pipe, she was like, wow, I can do anything with this group. And that's when you're like, yeah, you can kind of do anything, right? You can, if you feel like supported enough and you feel safe enough, and granted you have the education and the people leading also know what's safe and well enough for you to guide you through something that feels successful. Yeah, you kind of can do anything. And with that mentality, you'll go a lot further than you thought you could. And, you know, I'm just really proud and stoked of the women in our community more than anything. I'm like humbled and awed by them every year. They come and they're all like these incredible women leaders. And I think, you know, the scholarship, you know, I wish we could have provided them to everyone. But, you know, we can't. And our focus with Women of Winter is women leaders, because I think the mentality being like, you know, my personal mentality is I might not be able to change the world, but I can change the world I live in. And if all these little worlds intersect and all those moments of intersection at the Venn diagram, as you connect them and connect them and connect them, I think you end up having this like large network effect that you don't even understand or can explain or know where those true like repercussions are going to end up being. And, you know, look, the arc of change is long. And if you want some just like enduring and sustained change, it's even longer. So you kind of need that big network effect to create it.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm gonna lean in for a second because you that last part when you were talking about you were basically describing leadership, I think, and about how you actually can set people up for success. And when you were talking about how you grew it over time, one of the things that really hit me was that it wasn't about you, and it wasn't about this vision that you had made from day one that it had to be a certain way. And I think that that is truly that epitome of being a leader that's focused on maximizing the impact, and you're focused on the people and evolving the brand and evolving the people. And I mean, you literally just put it into words, and you have that example of listening and hearing and what were the needs and how did you set people up for success. And I'm so glad that you shared it with the audience in such an organic way, because it really is that sense of leadership. And I think it shows people it doesn't matter what the business is. You've talked about being successful in a law career. You've talked about being successful in your Life Score career and in Women of Winter. And it's again, you're the way that you've gone about it is by following your passions, being intentional, educating yourself, all of those things. And so I think in several different, it doesn't matter what business it is per se, when you take that mindset, you can really make magic happen. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And so folks, you can hear why I said at the beginning of this, she blows my damn mind.
Yeah, but I mean, I think like a big piece of it we haven't chatted about is like it's really important the team you put around you, because people will always be like, oh, how do you do it all? And I'm like, I don't. Like, simple fucking answer. I do not do it all. I have incredible teams around me that allow for these organizations to thrive. And I think, the first thing I talked to you about early on was like the biggest role I like to have in LifeScore is hiring. And culture and creating environments where people can thrive. I think first you have to identify the right people, right? That you think are going to be the right fit for what you're looking for, whatever that may be. And being really, really, if you're going to spend time doing that. Like whenever, we are hiring and it's for a pretty senior role, especially in a role that I think is going to impact the company, I read every single resume. I do not delegate that one out. And it's because, and I do every first line hire again, if because that's gonna change more than anything. I always say like one B team player will kill an A team, right? And you just can't have that, especially in small organizations. You have to be really, really involved in not just recruiting, but also creating an environment for them to thrive. And so you and me are both similar. Like I love being a coach. I think I was always a better coach than I was a player.
Okay, wait, let me say, folks, I didn't say this, but she also played D1 volleyball at NYU, and I read you had some sort of like aces record. So when
Yeah.
she says that, take note, folks.
I don't know if I still have that record, but maybe I still do. That'd be cool. But it was for a very long time, like decades. I had most aces per game record. But
But
that's
you're so
something.
right, it is. It's about like coaching and training
Yeah.
people and helping set people set up for success. And
Yeah. And just like, exactly. It's like for me, I think that's going to be your most important part. It's, yeah, of course, founders, whatever, they're going to cut, they're always, for better or for worse, they're always at the front. They're always talking about it. But the true people doing the work day to day operationally, making it truly happen is the team around them. And so I don't think enough like spotlight or glory is sort of provided to that. And I also think it's really important that as a founder, as a leader, your focus, I always say to like our team at LifeScore, I'm like, look, my first product, our first product is the team. If we do not optimize this team, if we do not make sure everyone's running on all cylinders, meaning like, as an athlete, you can't work 24 hours a day and show up to a game. It's just not possible. You will not perform, right? And so it's about like making sure everyone has what they need. Do they feel emotionally secure? Do they feel financially secure? Are you being competitive with, are they looking elsewhere because you're not giving them what they need, right? And so if your team is not optimized, guess what? Your external product, which is your number two product, will never be optimized. It will never sell well because your number one product is not doing well. And so I always say like, that's your
There you
most
have it,
important
folks.
thing.
literally is like caring about the people in your care. You know, I think that that's, no, I didn't invent that, but you know, it's like, but I say it all the time because it is so true and it is so key. That is the first, that's the most important thing on a daily basis. And then when you do that, the work, to your point, the work takes care of itself. So we don't have much time left because I know we both have things that we have to, we have a lot of things to run to. But let me ask you, I know you said you don't do it all and the team is really important, but at the same time, you've shared with me that skiing is actually part of your meditation. And so I do think it's important for us to just pause because when, and talk about the fact that you actually work to set yourself up for success and you work to make sure that you're in the right, air quotes, shape, fitness as a leader, to be able to be present and deliver for your staff. So I don't know if there's anything like a, you know, short thing you want to say about that, but.
Yeah. I mean, you have, you obviously have to take care of yourself to be able to take care of other people. I can't show up in a way that I want to, if I'm not taking care of myself. Right. So I definitely, I call it like, I don't really relate to like work-life balance. I'm much more like life by design, because if someone heard my day, they'd be like, wow, that's, you know, either that maybe like that's totally for me, or they'll be like, that girl's just absolute nutter. You know, I get up, first thing I have to do is, you know, my team is distributed. So I'm at the, you know, I'm getting up by 6 a.m. if not earlier on days that I'm on the hill, like on days I'm on the hill, I'm up by like 5 because I need to clear email. And then, you know, on the days that I go to the gym, I'm, you know, first thing in the morning, I have to do that. I can't, I'm like one of those people that just cannot think, or I'm foggy if I don't move first thing in the day. Right. And, you know, for me, I kind of need outlets in the winter. I need to ski. I need to teach skiing. I need to give people the opportunity to be able to find freedom on the mountain. And I need to do that too for myself. For me, I think there's so many lessons I learned from that. Like, I'm not a sit down and meditate kind of person. That's just not where I'm at. But my mind quiets when I'm teaching skiing or when I'm skiing. You know, a lot of it is like, I'm somewhere where I really can't focus on anything else. Like, I have to pay attention right now, right here, to these moments, you know, or bad things can happen. And that for me is like how I find my center, how I also can show up a lot better. You know, people will say to me, oh, you like don't really get stressed out that much in these situations, like at work. And I'm like, dude, you try leading a group of people down like a super steep chute and determining and calculating like, okay, who is anyone in this team going to fall, get hurt? What's going to happen if they get hurt? What do I do next? And so like in my other job, like I'm making true like life and limb decisions every day, all the time. And so if I sit down in a computer and I have to make a decision there, it's like, no, I'm good. I'm totally fine. Like, this doesn't faze me. Yeah. And being able to like push my decision-making limits in those areas, I think is really healthy for me. It gives me like a really, really calm and stoic and steady decision-making ability in other areas where I'm not making like choices that are that grave, right? And in the summer, I like to ride horses, same thing. Like, I think for me, it's finding moments of meditation where I can't really think about anything else. My brain's like a very busy brain, and I need to put it in positions where if you think about anything else, bad things will happen. And so, that's just how I center.
Yeah. I totally relate from my crazy riding, adventures and mountain biking and stuff. But I also want to pause because I think it's helpful for people to hear who might not be as familiar with this idea of, I'm using air quotes around meditation, because meditation does not have to be just sitting down, to your point. I feel it when I ride. I feel it when I do different things. I feel it when I do actually sit. But something that I've learned is that that process of whatever that meditation process, meditative, I guess, process is, actually helps to enable us to be in those other environments that are pressure, or where we need to deliver, or where I need to perform, and actually perform better, because we can actually almost like create time in those moments.
Yeah.
So that's a really great point. Cause again, I think to your point, some people say like, well, that's not for me. I don't just want to sit around, or, you know, they don't get it, but there's actually benefits that help you in the, in these other areas. So, Chris, I would keep you all day because you're so amazing. And to your point, I get this, so, I get so excited and inspired when we talk. I want to close it off though, because we've covered so many things: leadership, entrepreneurialism, life by design, which I think is such a beautiful way to talk about it, and purposefully, purposefully doing that. I don't know if I'm even making sense. So for people who have spent time with us today, are there one or two things that you really hope people take away from your episode?
Oh man, I hope they just listen to more of your episodes, because you've got great people on all the time, and I love listening to them, and I love talking to you. So, I mean, I just hope that, you know, people tune into more of what you're doing.
Oh, you're amazing. You're amazing. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
folks, if you're listening and you're like, wow, I'm really inspired, I want to learn more about any of these things, you know, you're able to do that. Reach out to Chris directly. I'll help provide her information. And also remember that in the Women of Winter, that is making the positive impact on BIPOC women, that there are opportunities to actually, it is a nonprofit now. So if you as a person or you as a brand want to get involved, there's opportunities for that. She did ask me for that plug, but I am very excited about it. And so I'm doing it, but
thank you.
All right. I'm going to let you go. Everybody have an awesome day. Chris, knock it out. Thank you so much, lady.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.